I'm Bob Franklin. Thanks for joining me on Like It Is. Today, an encore edition featuring jazz saxophonist Stanley Turrentine.
Mr. Turrentine visited the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, where he was awarded an honorary doctorate degree. My colleague Gene Moore sat down with Mr. Turrentine for a fascinating interview. We take you to that session with Gene Moore and jazz saxophonist Stanley Turrentine.
Well, it's just something to have you as a notable and noted artist on the campus of the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, and to have brought to this campus the kind of thrill as an internationally renowned personality.
Well, you know, I've been pretty blessed. You know, it's been nice, you know, because I played concerts here at the University of Maryland with Mr. Lampkin.
Yes.
And we had a good time.
Yes, with the jazz ensemble.
The jazz ensemble.
What do you think of that, Van?
Well, it's really nice. Mr. Lampkin is really, really doing a great job with the kids.
The kids seem to enjoy it, and I know they must
do.
Have enjoyed having you.
Oh, we had a ball that night. We certainly did. Yeah.
I tell you. You've been in the field of jazz for a long, long time yourself. What got you started?
Well, I guess it was coming from a musical family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody played music, and that was the topic of discussion around the house all the time. And because my father put the saxophone into my hand when I was about 10 years old.
Is that right?
And, you know, it went from there. Everybody, I was just surrounded by music. And at my household, my mother, my father, my sisters and brothers, and we all played music.
Do you think that had a part in keeping the young people out of trouble?
Well, I know it kept me because I had to practice all the time. And, you know, and I just loved to play. I loved it, you know, because my father used to take me to concerts to see, you know, all the big bands like Count Basie, Duke Ellington. And, you know, when I was very young, 7 years old, and I remember that today, it was I saw Jimmy Lunsford.
Ooh.
Huh. And I saw that band and I saw all the guys having so much fun and making so much beautiful music. I made my mind up right then and there. I said, that's what I want to be.
So you've really
and
made
And I made the commitment. Uh-huh. And I, you know, paid my dues, but of course, but I made the commitment right then and there. And I was blessed to do nothing but play music all my life.
What kind of dues did you have to pay?
Oh, you don't want to hear all
of it. Oh, yeah. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, when I first went on the road, I was 16 years old. I went on the road with Lowell Fulson, and the featured pianist was Ray Charles. Ray Charles didn't have a band at the time. He was playing piano with Lowell Fulson.
Mm-hmm.
And we headed straight down south. And we knew all about the racism and Jim Crow's and all that kind of things mm-hmm. that were happening at that time. And, you know, I was a very part of it, man. Our lives literally were in jeopardy all the time when we were traveling there at that time in the 50s. You know, I saw a lot of things, you know, because they had these separate water fountains, separate. We couldn't stay in the hotels. We had to stay in rooming houses. We couldn't eat in restaurants. We had to go to the back of the kitchen and order food and then pay for it. And they didn't give us a menu at all, just whatever they gave us. We had to pay for it, too. And a lot of things like that, you know, the injustices that were going on at that time.
How did you make music with all of that happening?
Well, we had to, because a lot of times we played a lot of jobs and we didn't get paid. And sometimes we wouldn't even have the gas fare to get, we have to chip in to get gas for the bus that we were traveling in. Sometimes we didn't have a place to stop to eat. There were plenty of restaurants, but we couldn't stop at any of them. There wasn't any facilities for blacks at that time. We had to keep moving. And a lot of times we didn't have the money when we didn't get paid, and we didn't eat. There were a lot of things that were happening. And that's what I mean by paying dues.
But you still stayed on the music road.
I loved it, and I still love it. I think I have as much enthusiasm about music today as I did when I first started playing.
Even with all those barriers, you kept going.
Because that was, it seemed regardless of whatever unfortunate thing that happened to us on the road, when we got up on a bandstand, it seemed to uplift us. You know, we lived to go to that bandstand to play. I think it was just our calling.
It was the music that pushed
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Were the audiences separated?
Certainly were. During that time, they had a rope separating the dance floor. Whites danced on one side, blacks danced on the other side.
Yet they had a black band.
It was confusing to me. Everybody was dancing to the same music, but whites were on the one side and blacks were on the other side.
Just playing a different tune in their own mind.
I don't know what they were. I could never figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Of all those experiences, is there any one special one that kind of stands out in your memory as either a turning point or an inspirational point that you could think of?
Well, I don't know whether this is inspirational. This is funny to me now that I think about it. You know, a guy that was in Fort Worth, Texas, and this white guy pulled a 44 and said, "Boy, can you play the blues?" Well, I've been playing the blues ever since. You know? So, I don't know. There wasn't all that doomy stuff. And, you know, we just had a lot of camaraderie at that time. A lot of guys did.
Well, let's hear some of the music. Now, that beautiful, beautiful tune is Thomasville off the More Than a Move CD. Talk a bit about that.
Well, you know, Thomasville, that's the name of the song, was called, it was written by my brother, Tommy.
Oh.
Tommy Jr. He plays trumpet. He played with Count Basie, Dizzy Gillespie. And matter of fact, that was the first band that I really played with when I was about 12 years old. Oh. We used to play in this place called the Perry Bar in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And I think I was about 13 or 14 years old. And Tommy writes a lot of good music. And we decided to record that song. And the way that album came about was, you know, I have like Ron Carter, Cedar Walton, Billy Higgins, and myself. Mm-hmm. And these guys are just, I think they're some of the greatest musicians, jazz musicians in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we went into that studio. It's a funny thing. We went into the studio, and actually, we didn't know what we were going to play. I mean, things just popped up. You know, he said, "Hey, well," my brother said, "Hey, well, Stanley, I got a tune for you." I said, "Yeah, well, let's try it." So it worked out. And then Cedar said, "Hey, I got another tune." And I said, "All right, there was something." That's the way it fell into place. It was no pre-production or anything. It just happened.
And that's been the best music sometimes.
I think so. I really think so. It's been the best things for me. Yeah. Yeah. So it turned out. And with the quality of a musician that we had, it worked out real fine.
Well, in calling it Thomasville, it comes from your brother, Tommy.
Right.
And then within that, the More Than a Mood CD, what else is on there?
Well, there's In a Sentimental Mood, They Can't Take That Away From Me.
Some of my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a song that was a favorite of mine that was written by Don Bias called, the title itself of the CD called More Than a Mood.
Mm.
That's some of them. Easy Walker by Dr. Billy Taylor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, I recorded on Dr. Taylor's last album on Verve.
Huh.
And he called this, I think the name of the album is A Matter of Fact.
Oh,
A Matter of Pride, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what it's called. Yeah.
Well, we're talking now about More Than a Mood, and we're talking with Dr. Stanley Turrentine. So when next time you're on somebody's program, it's Dr. Stanley Turrentine. Get out.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of an interview with Stanley Turrentine, guest hosted by Dr. Gene Moore.
That beautiful, beautiful melody is from If I Could, off of the CD If I Could, being played by tenor saxophonist Dr. Stanley Turrentine. Dr. Turrentine?
Yes, ma'am.
That was a fantastic piece that we were listening to. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, that was a song that was written by Pat Metheny. You know, I met him I was in Vienna, France, and I've heard that song about 4 or 5 years ago, and I caught up with him. I told him, I said, I like that tune, you know, give me a lead sheet, and that's how that arrived. And I ran into some of my old CTI cohorts, like Hubert Laws and, again, Ron Carter, Sir Roland Hanna, Grady Tate, and myself, and the bongo player, I forget the guy's name. Anyhow, Vince Edwards and all the guys. And Don Sobeski, who did the orchestra arrangements. We did 3 orchestra songs live. All this was done live. Wow. There were no computers at all in this studio at all. It was real violins, real cellos, and real harps. Everything was real. It was a very exciting record date for me.
It's gorgeous, a gorgeous melody. It just stays right with you all the way through.
It's a beautiful
song.
Yeah.
Now, you've done quite a few other numbers. I know one that I've heard of called Don't Mess With Mr. T. Is the Mr. T, Mr. Turrentine?
Well, you want to hear that story?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Marvin Gaye wrote this for a movie thing. But he also told me that he wrote it for me, but I never got any royalties for it. So it's really from a music score that Marvin Gaye wrote.
I want to hear that.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Don't Mess with Mr. T, coming off of Live at Blues Alley CD. And I'm convinced that the Mr. T that's named after is Dr. Stanley Turrentine,
oh, well,
the Mr.
T. Oh, that sounds so great. That sounds wonderful to me. Yes, it is.
Tell us a little bit of where you see jazz moving in the future. It's been such a glorious history, and it comes and goes. Where's it going now?
Well, it's going to be, you know, this. We have some very young, talented musicians that are coming up now. Like, for instance, I just worked with a great trumpeter in Milwaukee last weekend, and by the name of Roy Hargroves. And he's a very, very talented guy, and you're going to hear so much about him. He's only 23 years old.
Wow.
And he has so much talent. He's a great composer, a great player, and he leads his own band. And it's, I think the music is, the roots are there. The seed is there. It's still growing. There's another guy by the name of Kenny Garrett, who's an alto player, who played with the late Miles Davis. I think he's about in his early 30s or something. So the music is going, because the guys, we still have these young, innovating guys that are really producing some great music.
In the old days, they used to have those challenge things going. Do you see any challenges going between the young guys coming up and the old-timers?
Well, I think they all try to challenge us old-timers.
Now, that was... but, notice I didn't say you
old-timers.
Oh,
that's all right. That's all right. I'm proud.
I didn't say you old-timers.
I hope they can make it. I hope they can be say that they're old-timers. But I'm saying they're challenged, so that's great. It's healthy to me.
Is there also some sort of a mentorship or a linkage between those who've been around the scene a while and the youngsters who are coming aboard?
Well, I think so, because like the guys I mentioned, the two guys that I just mentioned, they really think of the past. They think about the history, and they study about the history of the music, and they respect the guys that came before them. Mm-hmm. And that's what I feel that you have to do. That's what I did, and I think that anybody of quality does. Because if you don't know where you've been, it's kind of hard to find out where you're going.
For real.
So you must really study what you intend to do, especially music, because there's so much music. A lifetime isn't enough music to learn. It's not enough time to learn about the music that's on this earth.
And the youngsters at the University of Maryland Eastern Shore have an extensive jazz program.
Yes.
And I suspect that they do a little bit of studying there. And you've played with them, haven't you?
I certainly have. Mr. Lampkin, Dr. Lampkin has done just a tremendous job. And you have a wonderful radio station here that really helps. Is just doing some... I listened to it on the way when I saw you can't get a bigger signal. I hope you can. Everybody should hear this station. It is really some quality music.
It's 50,000 watts now, and as soon as they can get some more money, I think they'll try to expand that thing. That's the thing.
Let's go give a fundraising something.
You got something there.
Yeah.
We'll have to do that.
Sure.
Yeah. The young people seem to be into both the history of jazz as well as into moving forward. And I suppose that's the kind of momentum you're talking about, linking up both.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Because you have a great radio station, you have a great musical director, and Mr. Lampkin and Michael and the staff here. It all goes hand in hand because, I used to listen to records like if I wasn't practicing, I was listening to music. I was listening to records. Mm-hmm. You know, my father would bring Coleman Hawkins and say, check this out, or Lester Young. And I got ideas, and then I finally developed my own style, my own way of playing. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a very important linkage between the education and the music.
Yeah, it's interesting, as you talk about the some of the playing, there used to be the small rooms on 52nd Street in New York.
Yeah, the Royal Roost.
And they play...
Well, that was before my time.
Of course, it's before mine. I'm just thinking back historically, of course.
Right.
But they played some good music.
Oh, you better believe it. It's a lot of the innovating things like that Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie did, and Roy Eldridge, and I can just think of... A lot of cats, man. Roy Hamp and all those guys.
Tenor saxophonist Stanley Turrentine, our guest this week on Like It Is. Many thanks to my colleague Gene Moore for doing a great job with this interview. If you're a regular listener of Like It Is, you know from time to time Gene Moore contributes mightily to Like It Is.
I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.